Hello, my friends. It is Thursday, April 3rd, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. Well, how's everybody doing this morning? Are we all feeling liberated? Oh my God, Trump declared his Liberation Day yesterday with a late afternoon press conference from the Rose Garden, announcing what he calls new reciprocal across the board, every country in the world, tariffs on everyone. It's like we're going to party like it's 1929 again. Oh, we'll get you in much more detail on that coming up in our first segment. It's just incredible, the insanity and the maladministration that we are living through. Hard to believe what we're going through at this point, but I'll try to make some sense of it for you. Also on the program today, we continue to get more fallout from our national security principles, particularly the national security advisor, Mike Waltz, who is now being reported to be a part of up to 20 different signal text chains discussing our most sensitive national secrets and military business. Also on the program, a look at how abortion bans are continuing to torture women all across the country. We've got a look at one woman in South Carolina who is being forced to carry around her dead fetus. We've got climate change in the news, with major insurers starting to warn that climate change is threatening the very foundations of capitalism itself. Oh no, what will we do without capitalism? Also, we've got news on the international front, the International Criminal Court, and Hungary, where the dictator there, Viktor Orban, has welcomed the genocidal leader of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, to the country. We'll give you an update on that and how that affects the International Criminal Court. We've got our regular Boycott Idaho segment, where there are two more laws to take a look at, one having to do with criminalizing the homeless and the other making sure that immigrants to the state remain sick and infected. Good thinking there, Idaho. Then we will wind up our show with a radical rant, where I take a look at how what we're doing now makes Brexit look positively intelligent. Hold my watered-down beer, UK. We're doing worse than Brexit here in the United States. All of that is coming up on the Radical Russ Show. Before we get into that, though, I also want to make mention of a little bit of news that came across that said that Elon Musk will be leaving the White House soon. Yeah, Donald Trump came out and said Elon Musk will be winding down his work and returning to work on Tesla, that he won't be having such a prominent role in the White House anymore. Seems like little Donnie's got upset that the spotlight is not all on him anymore, and maybe a little upset that Elon Musk has brought some loser vibe to his White House, going out there to Wisconsin to try to sway the Supreme Court race, pumping in over $20 million, only to lose by 10 points. That's right, Elon, nobody likes you. Nobody likes you, and they think you're icky and they want you to go away, including Donald Trump. Couldn't happen to a better guy, although I don't know how serious we should really take this. Musk is still going to be behind the scenes, wrecking our government every way he can. The tech bros want to have him there. They've got to have the CEO in charge while the figurehead president just signs executive orders and makes crazy speeches from the Rose Garden. So yeah, take it with a grain of salt. I don't think Elon Musk is going anywhere. Well, folks, I don't know if you know this, but I record this podcast very early in the morning. I get up at 4:20 a.m. That's right, 4:20 a.m. Pacific time. And I usually start recording about 6 in the morning Pacific time. But I decided to wait till 6:30 Pacific, because 6:30 Pacific is 9:30 Eastern time, the opening of the stock market, where I am first to report here the Dow Jones Industrial Average has opened at 1,100 points down. The stock market is down 1,100 points as of this very moment, 2.5% down. How's your 401k doing, folks? Are you sick of the winning? Yeah, Trump said we'd be sick of the winning, and so far the stock market is crashing as well as the S&P 500, the NASDAQ is crashing, all of these stock markets taking a huge tumble because of Trump's so-called Liberation Day. And I got to give him credit for one thing. Let's give Trump credit for one thing. He is a master brander. Everyone in the media is talking about this Liberation Day, instead of Smoot Hawley Day or Great Depression Day. The boy sure can do some marketing. And he's calling these reciprocal tariffs, and the rest of the news media is just faithfully parroting that. Reciprocal tariffs, as if, reciprocal, we're just getting back at them. We're just doing unto them what they have done unto us. Yesterday at the Rose Garden, Trump announced a minimum across the board 10% tariff on every country in the world, with some tariffs set as high as 50%. Now, to give you some perspective on this, the average U.S. tariff before this was about 2.2%. The European Union was tariffing an average of about 2.7% against us. China was on average tariffing about 3% against us. So we are talking orders of magnitude greater in tariffs than what had previously been understood in this global economy. Of course, this is wrecking the global economy, including a 25% tariff minimum on all cars and parts imported into the United States. The tariffs have gotten so crazy that a lot of people noted he put a 10% tariff on the Heard and McDonald Islands, a couple of islands off of Antarctica controlled by Australia that are completely uninhabited by humans. We don't trade at all with the Heard and McDonald Islands, unless we're talking about getting some food back and forth with penguins that live there, but that's it. Now, these tariffs, of course, are a tax on Americans. This has been gone through so many times on the news that my lady love is sick of it. She's like, yes, we know tariffs are paid for by the consumer. But unfortunately, hon, most people don't know that. They think, like Donald Trump, the idiot in chief, that somehow the foreign companies pay this, that somehow the foreign countries are going to pay this, that, okay, if we're trading with China and we charge them a 30% tariff, then China will just fork over the 30% and they won't raise their prices at all. They won't try to recoup that loss. They'll just do it for our own good. And upon hearing these tariffs, the immediate reaction from the Secretary of Commerce was to warn American companies not to raise their prices as a result of these tariffs. What are we talking, price controls now? Are we getting the government to interfere with capitalism? I thought you guys were all free market guys. But no, the tariffs are on, and the chart is out showing all of the different tariffs. And people were wondering, where the hell did he come with these numbers? Because in the list of these numbers, Trump is saying that the European Union tariffs us 39% and that China tariffs us 67%. So we have to tariff them back to make up for that huge percentage. But like I told you a second ago, that's not true. The European Union's average tariff is 2.7%, not 39%. China's average tariff is 3%, not 67%. So where is Trump coming up with these numbers that we're supposedly getting gouged by? Well, a guy on Twitter took a look at these numbers and started doing some backward calculations and figured out how Trump came up with these tariff numbers. And this was later confirmed by the White House that put out the actual formula. The math is like this. To determine what the tariff is being issued by the foreign country, Trump is taking our trade deficit with that country and dividing it by the exports that we sell to that country. In other words, he's not measuring the tariff percentage, he's measuring the difference in import and export as a percentage. Now, it's a lot of math, but maybe I can give you a simple example to kind of explain this. Let's take the country of Wakanda. All right, fictional country of Wakanda. And let's say that Wakanda buys $20 million worth of U.S. steel. But Wakanda has a 5% tariff on that, just to keep the numbers simple, right? So they buy $20 million with a U.S. deal, but there's a 5% tariff, so that works out to $21 million of import, okay? Now, let's say, in response, America buys from Wakanda $500 million or $400 million worth of vibranium to make, you know, Captain America's shield and stuff, right? $400 million in vibranium, but we have a 5% tariff on Wakanda, so that bumps it up to $420 million. Right. So in total, we import 21 or Wakanda imports 21 million of steel from us. We import 420 million of vibranium from them. We each tariff each other 5%. Right. So in the real world, there's no difference in the tariff between us and Wakanda. We both tariff each other 5%. But we do have a trade deficit with Wakanda. That trade deficit being $399 million, right? We sold them $20 million plus a million in tariff, but we bought from them $400 million plus $20 million in tariff. So there's a trade deficit of $399 million. Now, at this point, we need to stop. We need to stop and get our heads around what trade deficit means. Because in Trump world, trade deficit means they're ripping us off. They're treating us poorly. They're taking advantage of us. No, they're not. When you trade with someone, you buy something from them that you want. They buy something from you that they want. There's no requirement that they be equal. If I'm buying $20 million in steel from Wakanda and they're or $400 million in vibranium from Wakanda, and they're buying $20 million in steel from us, Trump's idea is that they should be buying $400 million in steel from us. Or we should reduce our purchase of vibranium down to $20 million. In Trump's mind, he thinks that a fair trade is when one country buys exactly as much from the other country as it buys from them. Trump seems to think that we're getting ripped off when we sell our steel to Wakanda because we buy so much more vibranium. Wrap your mind around that. He thinks we're being ripped off when we don't sell as much to someone as they buy from us, whether or not they need that extra or we have that extra to sell, right? So in his mind, we're getting ripped off because we're buying all this stuff from China, but not selling as much stuff to China. He thinks that's a ripoff, rather than consumers getting what they want. Okay? So he's got this thing where he thinks that the tariff relates to the trade deficit. So in this Wakanda example, how he'd figure out the tariff, he wouldn't think that Wakanda is tariffing us 5%. He would say, okay, take that $420 million minus the $21 million and then divide that by 420. So $399 million trade deficit divided by $420 million worth of exports works out to a 95% tariff. That's what Wakanda's tariff would be in Trump world. But that's not the tariff. That just means they purchase 95%. Or they sell 95% more stuff to us than we buy from them. It's a rate, not a tariff. It's a difference. It's a measure of difference. So Trump's got all these funny numbers that represent the difference between what would be, where it would be equal, where we'd be selling to them as much as we're buying from them. And then he just takes that number and cuts it in half with a minimum of 10%. So that's why the herd in McDonald Islands ended up at 10%, because we don't sell or buy anything to them. Our trade deficit with them is zero. So it ends up being a 10% minimum. So this is just absolutely bonkers, as some of the financial experts out there are putting it. It's just nuts. And supposedly the idea here behind these massive tariffs is to get everyone to buy American. Let's get everyone to buy American. If we put the tariff on Germany and the car parts at 25%, that'll make the German car go up 25% more. And then the American cars, why, the American car makers, they would never raise their prices to match that, would they? The man has zero idea of how economics works. And this is coming from a guy who has very little understanding of how economics works. Okay. Me and capitalism don't get along so well, but even I understand this is idiocy. If you've got, let's say, hammers, you're selling hammers, right? And you got hammers that are made in America and hammers that are made overseas. And the hammers all cost $10, right? And so you throw a tariff on the hammers that are coming from overseas, and it makes those hammers all end up costing $15. So you got four hammers on the shelf that cost $15. They're all the foreign hammers. And then you got one hammer on the shelf that costs $10. That's the American hammer, right? You think that hammer's going to stay at $10? What American corporation wouldn't look at this and say, hey, all my competitors are selling hammers at $15 because of these tariffs. Why, if my hammer cost $14, it would still be cheaper and people would buy more of it, even though I was selling it for $10. That's exactly what's going to happen here. Is even if the tariffs magically do make these foreign products go up in price, the domestic products will also rise in price to be just slightly cheaper than them to squeeze as much profit out of you and me as possible. We saw this happen when in Trump 1.0, he put some tariff on washers. I forget what it was, you know, his fascination with water pressure and all that. But he put some tariff on washers and those prices went up. But so too did the price of dryers, even though there wasn't a tariff on dryers, because capitalistic corporations are required by law to maximize profit. If you make something go across the board more expensive for all the foreign products, the domestic products will also rise to just barely meet them, but beat them. So get ready for the price of everything to go up. And furthermore, this anachronistic notion of Trump's that there are such things now as exclusively foreign products and exclusively domestic products is false. There are very few things, you know, maybe agricultural products you could say that about, but cars? No way. There are foreign companies with American factories. There are American companies with foreign parts. Everything is going to become more expensive as a result of Trump's tariff palooza. Now, we could get out of this because, believe it or not, Trump does not have this power. Trump has only been given the power to set these tariffs thanks to Congress, which over the years has abrogated its duty when it comes to tariffs. In our Constitution, the power to levy tariffs is an exclusive province of the Constitution of the Congress. This is the power of the Congress to raise tariffs, but over the years, they've passed these different acts and emergency declarations that allow the president, under an emergency or to protect American goods and companies, in emergency circumstances, he can raise these tariffs. Well, it's been one of those kind of situations now where they've just declared kind of everything's a general emergency, and so Trump's free to raise tariffs on whatever. But I think some of the Republicans are starting to recognize how he is setting about to absolutely crater the global economy, and maybe they're not wanting to put their name on that. There was a vote on a bill put forth by Tim Kaine, the Democrat from Virginia, who he was a vice presidential candidate. Remember that? Yeah, so Tim Kaine put this vote out to end the emergency declaration. There's one particular emergency declaration that has been given to justify the Canadian tariffs on the Canadian imports and exports. And this vote went 51-48 in his favor, with four Republicans breaking rank and joining the Democrats to end this emergency declaration to be able to claw back some power for the Congress to regulate these tariffs, with the very specific tariffs on Canada we're talking about. The four Republicans were Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, from Kentucky, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, and Susan Collins from Maine. So the typical ones that you might expect to break in the Republican Party. But this is the first time we've seen the Republican Party in the Senate breaking with Trump on pretty much anything. This will go to the House, and we'll see whether or not the House continues along with it. But given the MAGA nature of the House, it will probably die there, and the Trump tariffs on Canada will continue. Supposedly, also, we've got Trump tariffs on Canada and Mexico of 25% because of fentanyl's danger to America. That's part of the danger that we're, the emergency that allows Trump to put these tariffs out, because of the fentanyl that's pouring over the border of Canada, when far more drugs and guns pour across the border into Canada than across the border from Canada. Let's check back in on the stock market, where the Dow Jones is now down 1,200 points and continuing to fall. The whiskey leaks continue, now with the national security principles leaking against one another, trying to make sure they're not the scapegoat who goes down for risking our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines' lives by discussing classified secret attack war battle plans over Signal. The latest report is that Mike Waltz, the national security advisor, who in the Signal chat was the one who invited the journalist Jeffrey Goldberg into the chat, and who texted within that chat, quote, as we discussed on the other PC, the other private chat, which led people to think, gosh, there must be more chats then, if he's saying the other chat. And the fact that everybody on this chat didn't object to the fact that they were in a chat kind of suggests that there were more chats. Well, the reporting now is out, and according to the leak, Mike Waltz has been a part of at least 20 such Signal chats involving national security and government information being passed back and forth. According to people who were a part of those chats, who wanted the condition of anonymity so that they wouldn't be fired or attacked in any way, up to 20 of these Signal chats, folks, they are conducting our American government business on Signal. We reported yesterday how Mike Waltz has been conducting business on Gmail. I wondered what's next. The back page ads, the bathroom wall, smoke signals. It's just amazing, just incredible to me, the lack of care, the disregard these people have for our government and the institutions of our government and the laws that we've passed to maintain our records, to maintain an archive for history, to understand the deliberations that have gone down in our government to conduct military operations in our name. The disrespect, the absolute disrespect these people have for our government. Someone was asking the other day, if a foreign enemy had invaded the United States and was occupying the United States, and that foreign government's goal was to destroy the United States as the leading superpower in the free world, what would they be doing different? Would they do anything different than what they're doing now? Crash our economy. Make sure that we're all subject to disease and infection. Destroy our social safety nets. Throw us into poverty. Threaten all our allies. Cut us off from military support. Isolate us on the world stage. When the history of this time is written, Vladimir Putin is going to go down as being the most successful spy in all of human history. For he was able to fulfill the prophecy of the Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev, who came before him, who promised that they would take over the United States without firing a shot. that they would destroy us from within. I'd say that Putin had a little assist from Osama bin Laden as well. This all began with 9/11. This all began with 9/11 and us losing our collective shit and starting our way down this path to fascism, the Patriot Act, the torture at Abu Ghraib, the crashing of the economy, the allowing of the bankers to run rampant. But there's blame to go around on the Democratic side too, not holding people to account, not holding any of the Bush criminals to account, failing to take advantage of a Democratic trifecta with larger majorities in the House and Senate than I have seen in my lifetime, and Barack Obama failing to codify Roe, add D.C., Puerto Rico as states, just dropping the ball on exercising that power. And how sad is it to have lived through Barack Obama having 187 days of a filibuster-proof Senate and a 50-so vote majority in the House and a popular mandate in the vote, to see that all pissed away? And now to see Trump with no mandate, with the barest majorities in Congress, running roughshod over every institution, every norm, every law, every regulation that stands in his way. If we ever recover from this, if we ever manage to have democratic governance in this country again, I hope they learn the lesson that we need not be restrained, that we can think big, that we can go for big policy ideas. We couldn't do any worse than Trump. All right, checking back in for a live look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is now down 1,325 points or 3.15%. Let's take a look at the state of South Carolina, where we have a horrible story out there. The woman's name is Elizabeth Weber, or Weber, I'm not sure how she pronounced it, and this is her story.
But what you guys need to understand with these laws is it's not just people who are going having elective abortions that are being affected by these laws. Because my baby is dead. My baby doesn't have a heartbeat. My baby is gone. But I am not allowed to do anything about it. I just sit here and wait for another week and suffer and have a chance at hemorrhaging and have a chance at infection all because of these stupid laws.
That's 31-year-old Elizabeth Weber. She's being forced to carry her dead fetus right now because South Carolina has an abortion ban. She's already had 3 ultrasounds that show her fetus is dead. Her fetus has no heartbeat. But they want to wait another week to give her a 4th ultrasound just to be sure her pregnancy has really ended. Weber says that the doctor apologized, said, "I wish it was different. I wish we could help you." It's not okay. And she has to go home and wait while she has this dead fetus inside her. She can't travel to North Carolina where she might be able to get abortion care because she has 3 daughters already. They need child care. She'd have to take time off from her job that she can't take time off for. Meanwhile, there's a hospital 10 minutes away with all the expertise and equipment needed to take care of her. She is suffering from hyperemesis gravidarum, which is extreme nausea from her pregnancy. And the problem with that is the symptoms of this hyperemesis mimics the symptoms of infection and sepsis. So, while she's sitting there for a week with the dead fetus inside her, feeling nauseous, feeling terrible, she has to ask herself, is this just normal for my pregnancy, or am I now dying? Am I infected? Am I poisoned? This is happening every day across America. Pregnant women needing pregnancy-related health care that they cannot access because of a stupid abortion ban. I told you the story in Idaho where the 13-year-old girl, the pregnant 13-year-old girl, is going into labor. She's having contractions. But the doctors can't treat her in Idaho because Idaho made a law saying that kids have to have parental consent for any medical procedure. And they couldn't find her mom because her mom's homeless, living in a car somewhere. These laws that get in between patients and their doctors kill people, harm people, torture people. Imagine the psychological torture of carrying around your dead fetus for weeks and weeks. It's shameful. Let's check back in with a live look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is now down over 1,400 points, or 3.33%. For more bad news, let's shift to the climate, where the climate crisis is on track to destroy capitalism, warns a senior figure from the Allianz Insurance Group. This is reported from The Guardian. Gunther Tallinger is the man on the board of Allianz SE, one of the world's biggest insurance companies. And he's saying the world is fast approaching temperature levels where insurers will no longer be able to offer cover for many climate risks. Carbon emissions are still rising, and policies will result in a global rise of temperature between 2.2 and 3.4 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. The damage at 3 degrees Celsius will be so great that governments will be unable to provide the financial bailouts, and it will be impossible to adapt to many climate impacts. Weather damages for the decade to 2023 have hit $2 trillion. The figure was $400 billion in 2024, and it just continues to go up. Former UN Assistant Secretary General for Climate Change, Janos Pastor, says, quote, "The insurance sector is a canary in the coal mine when it comes to climate impacts. We're fast approaching temperature levels where insurers will no longer be able to offer coverage for many of these risks. The math breaks down. The premiums exceed what people or companies can pay. This is already happening. Entire regions are becoming uninsurable." Noting that places in, say, California, for example, where home insurance will no longer cover wildfires. Threatening the very foundation of the financial sector, this is a climate-induced crisis. This applies not only to housing, but to infrastructure, transportation, agriculture, and industry. The economic value of entire regions, coastal, arid, and wildfire-prone, will begin to vanish from financial ledgers. Markets will reprice rapidly and brutally. This is what a climate-driven market failure looks like. Insurers unable to insure you for flooding or for wildfires or for tornadoes or hurricanes. The rise of the sea level. And yet, the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, recently took out from our war planning and our strategic initiative planning any mention of climate change. We can't talk about it anymore, how it might affect the Pentagon, how it might affect military preparedness, because it's the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil approach in the Trump maladministration. We're just not going to talk about climate change. We're just not going to talk about it. We're just going to let it run rampant and not prepare for the impacts from it. But don't worry, we don't have to wait for climate change to collapse the global economy. Trump's got tariffs to do that for us. All right, time to take another live look at the U.S. stock market, where the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 1,500 points, or over 3.6%. So much winning. Wanted to talk a little bit about the visit by Bibi Netanyahu, the butcher of Israel, the butcher of Gaza, I should say, who's visiting Hungary at the invite of its dictator, Viktor Orban, despite the fact that Hungary is a signatory to the International Criminal Court. The International Criminal Court, which has issued arrest warrants for Bibi Netanyahu and his defense minister, Yoav Gallant, for their crimes against humanity in connection with the war in Gaza, specifically the use of starvation as a instrument of war by the denial of aid trucks being let into the country and specifically to starve the Palestinian people into compliance. Israel's offensive has killed more than 50,000 Palestinians, according to Gaza's health ministry. Israel says they've only killed about 20,000 militants, they say. So, you know, tens of thousands of people dead, depending on who you want to believe. The ICC issued the warrant. Orban invited Bibi Netanyahu to Budapest and then accused the court of interfering in an ongoing conflict for political purposes. All 27 countries in the European Union, including Hungary, are signatories to the International Criminal Court, and anyone who's a signatory to that court is supposed to enforce its rulings, including arrest warrants. But Orban says he believes the ICC is no longer an impartial court, not a court of law, but a political court. And this was most clearly shown by the decisions regarding Israel. I am convinced that this otherwise important international judicial forum has been degraded into a political tool with which we cannot and do not want to engage. So, in response to that as well, Hungary has signaled that it will be withdrawing from the International Criminal Court. Understand also that the United States, and Russia for that matter, have never been members of the International Criminal Court. We've not signed on to that because, you know, we like to commit crimes internationally and not be held to account for it. Time for our regular segment on Boycott Idaho, why you should avoid the handmade state. And in particular, boycott the Idaho potato. No red state is more singularly associated with a product than Idaho and the potato. They even brag about it on their license plates. So let's make a show of economic force. Let's show that the blue states and what the hell, red states want to join in too. Let's get in on this. We're no longer going to tolerate these states treating their people like second-class citizens. We're no longer going to tolerate these anti-abortion, anti-LGBT, anti-homelessness, anti-common-sense laws coming out of these red states. Let's put the economic hurt on Idaho. Boycott the potato. Boycott Idaho. We've got some updates to some laws in Idaho and a new one to get your focus on. First of all, we talked about the Idaho Health Freedom to Infect Others law that was recently vetoed by Idaho Governor Brad Little. This was the law that was set to expand Idaho's anti-coronavirus mandate law. Idaho, during the pandemic, passed a law that businesses, schools, government entities could not require you to get the COVID vaccine. Could not require it, could not mandate it. You're free to go unvaccinated in the state of Idaho when it comes to COVID. Well, that just wasn't enough for the health freedom people who want to reject all scientific inquiry and progress since the 1800s with respect to communicable diseases. So they have moved forward with the Health Freedom Law, and what it sought to do was to expand that mandate to all medical treatments so that no school, no government, no business could require you to have any medical treatment, any vaccination. Governor Little vetoed this, and a lot of the controversy over it that got him to veto it had to do with schools and the fact that had this law passed, schools couldn't have any vaccine mandates, not just COVID, but mumps, measles, rubella, pertussis, whooping cough, all these other things that you get your childhood vaccines for. They could not require that. And in fact, it would go so far as that you couldn't require someone to put a bandage on an oozing wound. You couldn't require someone to cover their mouth when they cough. No medical treatments could be mandated. So after the veto, the health freedom people are back in the legislature with competing bills to move forward with some sort of health freedom to infect others. House Bill 472 would still ban private businesses and government entities from refusing service to anyone who doesn't treat their diseases, would also apply to their employees. However, they tweaked it so there'd be an exception to keep sick kids home from school. That's it. That's your one exception. Keep sick kids home from school. But hey, Bob, you got the measles? We can't force you to not come into work. Harry, you got a gaping head wound? Yeah, you can still work the salad bar. Just disgusting. Now, the other side, the Senate bill, has a similar carve out, except this one is just a carve out for daycares, not public or private schools. So only the daycare could force you to keep your measles infected kid at home, but schools would be forced to allow your measles infected kid to come to school. This all got started when one of the Republican representatives from Nampa, my hometown, Steve Tanner, complained that his civil rights were violated during the COVID epidemic because he was working for a company that required him to be fully vaccinated, despite the fact that he was working remotely. He complains, not only were my civil rights violated, but the company had no way to resist the power of the federal government. And he had moved from California, you see. Representative Clint Hostetler from Twin Falls, who also moved to Idaho from California, said, he left a tyrannical state like myself and many others where we were chased out of stores because we didn't have a mask properly tight around our nose. Which just gets back to my point about Republicans and what they think freedom is. Republicans think of freedom like a toddler. You can't make me. No, but you can't make me do that. I get to do what I want. You can't make me. With no concern for society, the health of others. So we'll keep you posted on the health freedom to infect others bills as they wind through the Idaho legislature. It's not clear yet whether either of these will make it to the governor's desk. But a bill that did make it to the governor's desk and has been signed is Senate Bill 1141. This one prohibits public camping in Idaho cities larger than 100,000 population, which is just three Idaho cities, Boise, Meridian, and Nampa, which is basically the southwestern Idaho Treasure Valley area. It's one big kind of metroplex area. The law defines public camping as the unauthorized lodging or residing in a temporary or outdoor habitation that includes sitting or lying for a prolonged amount of time or sleeping in a vehicle. So you can't put up a tent, you can't sleep in your car, you can't even take a nap in the public park without running afoul of this law. But the law does not penalize the unhoused individual who's doing the camping or the sleeping. No. You penalize the homeless person, and then you might start running afoul of court orders and injunctions. These people have rights, you see. So this bill has been crafted like some of those bills that came out of Texas with respect to abortion, in that it creates kind of a bounty system. This law, Senate Bill 1141, doesn't penalize the camper. It penalizes the city. $10,000 for every violation if the Attorney General's office pursues the civil action. So if there is a homeless encampment, 10 people in tents, and the city doesn't sweep them out immediately, that's $100,000 waiting there for the state of Idaho to go collect from the city of Boise. Anything they can do to try to keep the homeless situation invisible. Now, you know what's going to happen from this. First of all, while Boise has a 220,000 population, there's a little sliver of city that resides within Boise called Garden City that does not have a 100,000 population. So people will just meander on down State Street, cross it to the Garden City side, and now they can set up their tents. Same thing with Nampa or Meridian. There are unincorporated parts of the county that lie within their city borders. So people will just find those places where they can't be rousted for a $10,000 bounty. And the third law I want to get to today, this one has not yet made it, or it's made it to the governor's desk. He has yet to sign it. He's got 5 days to sign it, veto it, or allow it to become law without his signature. This is a bill, House Bill 135, and this bill requires state agencies to verify the immigration status of adults applying for benefits. Now, already in the state of Idaho, if you want to get any sort of public assistance from the state, and understand we're talking about state assistance, not federal stuff. This wouldn't apply, you know, applying for federal benefits for immigrants. But to receive public assistance in Idaho, the state agency already has to verify that you're a legal resident. But there are exceptions. There are exceptions. The state of Idaho would allow you to get emergency health care, to get immunized against communicable diseases, to get tested for communicable diseases, to get treated for communicable diseases, to get prenatal and postnatal care, and to get food assistance, or WIC, for dependent children. Those were the exceptions. We were allowing in the state of Idaho immigrants to access those services, but no more. Under House Bill 135, if you are an illegal immigrant, Idaho will no longer help you get immunized. Idaho will no longer test you for communicable diseases and treat them. Idaho will no longer give you prenatal or postnatal care. And Idaho will no longer provide you food assistance for your dependent children. And keep in mind that some of these children we're talking about are Americans. Their parents may be undocumented, but they showed up in America and they had their kid on American soil. And under the 15th Amendment, at least until Trump gets rid of it, we have such a thing as birthright citizenship. So the state of Idaho now is talking about denying postnatal care and food assistance to American kids just because their parents are undocumented. Now, they still left the exception for emergency services, so at least the immigrant can go to the emergency room. But Idaho, we are talking about a very agricultural state, a state that is dependent on immigrant labor to pick all those crops. Is that what you want, Idaho? Immigrants picking your crops that can't get immunizations? Immigrants that can be carrying around communicable diseases? Immigrants whose diseases they can't get treatment for, still going out there and picking your food? Pregnant immigrants? Oh, we're such a pro-life state. Oh, we're so pro-life. We so care about the fetus that we have to ban abortion in every circumstance. But you, immigrant mom, no prenatal care for you. And once you have that kid, oh no, we're not going to do any medical treatment for the kid. No postnatal care and no WIC, no food for your kid. Because we're pro-life. Because what about the children? Every one of those legislators voting for House Bill 135 would describe themselves as a Christian. I guess they missed that part about Jesus saying, "Suffer the little children, come unto me." And how you treat the least of these is how you treat me. Time for the radical rant, but first let's check in on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. 1 hour into trading live here on the day after Liberation Day, we are still at about 1,500 points underwater, about 3.5 points lost off the stock market, still flirting around the 40,000 level. Who knows, by the end of the day, we might be below 40,000. And it was just 3 months ago when The Economist and other mags were out there touting the American economy as the envy of the world, how Joe Biden had shepherded the economy past the COVID recession better than any of the other developed countries, lower inflation, better economic recovery, and now that's all gone. In the span of 9 weeks, Donald Trump has managed to throw the American economy in the shitter. It's like we turned to the UK and said, "Hey, Brexit, you thought that was the worst thing? Hold our watered-down beer. Let us show you how to completely destroy your own domestic economy." And it's just so sad, the devastation this is going to wreak, not just economically, but politically. We've already seen our allies in South Korea and Japan running to the arms of China. They're working together to combat our tariffs. The EU already pulling its defense contracts with the United States, deciding to go with French-made planes and German-made material, make sure they can defend themselves. We've already seen countries like the UK and Germany and Denmark issuing travel advisories to their people, warning them not to come to the United States because of the political upheaval, warning them that they could be disappeared to a concentration camp in El Salvador with no due process rights, no way to appeal, no way to get home. We still have Kilmar Abrego Garcia down there that the American government admits was caught up in an administrative error, admits had committed no crime, admits should not be down there, but says, "Oops, so well, we messed up. We can't bring him back. He's subject to El Salvadoran jurisdiction now. My gosh, we just have no leverage." We've become the bad guys. We've become every country we ever fought against. We are actively working to make the world a worse place. We are allying with the worst people, with Orban in Hungary, with Putin in Russia, with Kim Jong-un in North Korea, Xi Jinping in China, the Ayatollahs in Iran. We are now a part of the axis of evil. We are now the leading force for destruction in the world. This is now our legacy. This is now the United States legacy. We're no longer the shining city on the hill. We're no longer the beacon of freedom for people around the world. We're a symbol of imperialism and destruction and warfare and genocide and economic calamity. I don't know if we will recover from this in my lifetime. This may be the end of the United States in my lifetime. And already we're seeing the brain drain from the United States. We're seeing professors and scientists desperately seeking new opportunities overseas, in Europe, in Canada. Timothy Snyder, the Princeton professor, who's the leading authority, one of the leading authorities on fascism and the history of fascism, has left the United States for the University of Toronto. When the experts on fascism are bailing from the country, it's a sign And unfortunately, most of us, we have no way out. I remarked the other day on social media that living in America right now feels like you're standing on a beautiful, golden, sunny California beach. And you're looking out at the ocean, and suddenly the ocean swiftly and dramatically recedes. And you know what it means. You've read the warnings. You know that when the ocean suddenly recedes like that, a tsunami is imminent. And there you are, standing on the beach, watching the ocean recede. And there's no higher ground. There's nowhere to go. You don't have a car to get out. You don't have the funds to protect yourself. You know the tsunami is coming. And all you can do is stand there on the beach and wait for it. That's what it feels like right now in America. We're all sitting on edge, seeing that sea recede, knowing the tsunami is coming, seeing the stock market tank, seeing these tariffs go up, knowing that the higher prices are coming, seeing our government agencies being decimated, knowing that one day those Social Security checks aren't going to show up, seeing the destruction of our infrastructure with respect to science and health, knowing that that bird flu is sitting there on the horizon, waiting to infect us all, waiting to mutate, with nobody to hold it back. We see these disasters coming, the climate change disasters. We see people all across the Midwest right now who are facing unprecedented tornado warnings. Wildfires happening in South Carolina in March and April. We see it coming. We know the devastation is on its way. And guys like Chuck Schumer sitting out there saying, well, let's just wait and see how Trump's numbers go down. Boy, all this bad stuff happens. Trump's going to be really unpopular, and then we'll be there ready to swoop in. How many of us are going to die by then? How many businesses are going to close by then? How many people are going to be infected by then, given lifelong disease and disability? How bad does it have to get? Because we've done this before, this tariff thing. We've done it before. We did it in 1828. We had massive across-the-board tariffs. And we did it in 1930 with Smoot-Hawley. We had massive across-the-board tariffs. And in both cases, 1828, 1930, massive global depression. Seems like we have to do this every 100 years or so because everybody who lived through it before has to be dead before anybody'd be stupid enough to try it again. We did it twice before and caused massive worldwide depression, but this time, under Trump, yeah, sure, it's going to usher in the new age of America first, right? So I hope everybody's ready to start fighting back. The fighting back starts this April 5th, Saturday. There are protests happening all across the country in every state capital and places that aren't state capitals. I'm going to one here in Southern Oregon that's happening on Saturday, and I'll bring you some audio from that as well. But if you've never been political before, if you've never held a sign in the street before, if you've never called your representative before, you better start getting used to it. You better start learning how to do that kind of stuff. And you better start building up some mutual aid. You better start getting to know your neighbors. You better go visit a food bank and start to figure out how that works, because we're all headed there, folks. It's going to be breadlines. It's going to be Hoovervilles. The summer of 2025 is going to be lit. And I mean that literally and figuratively. But keep in mind, as things get bad and go from bad to worse, that's going to be the excuse Trump needs to ratchet us all down, to declare martial law, to cancel elections, to install himself as dictator for life. This is the way the playbook works. Authoritarians come in and wreck things so badly that you have to turn to them as the strong man to make it all better. For so long in this country, we've lived with the attitude that it can't happen here. We're America. We're special. We're exceptional. We're different than everyone else. Folks, we're not. We're not at all. It is happening here. Every Banana Republic story you were ever told, all the fears you're ever told about despotism or communism or socialism or fascism, they're happening now. They're happening here. We're disappearing people. We have concentration camps. We are taking people off the streets for their political views, for what they posted on social media. If you're not ashamed of this country right now, then you don't love this country. I love this country with all my heart. I love everything that it was founded for. Its principle that we are a country of ideals. That anyone can be an American. We're not a American by our race, by our blood, by our parents, by our creed, by our religion. We're Americans because we believe in freedom for everyone. We believe in all men are created equal. Even though we haven't lived up to that, we strive for it. We strive for a more perfect union. And it's time for the people to take this union back from the corporations, from the demagogues, from the preachers. It's time for us to assert our secular democracy and perhaps to water the tree of liberty with the blood of a few tyrants. Well, that's all the time I've got this morning for the program. Thanks for joining us, and please share the podcast with others. I'd appreciate that. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. All right, for our post-credits update, let's take a look at the Dow Jones still down 1,500 points, or about 3.6%. Looking at other markets, the S&P 500 index is down 4%, its lowest level since September, and on pace for its worst day since the 2022 inflation crisis. The tech-heavy NASDAQ is down by 4.9%. Global markets also fell yesterday. Europe's benchmark index tumbled 2.34%. Germany's index fell 2.29%. Japan's Nikkei index is down 2.77%. And Hong Kong's index is down 1.52%. Also, the US dollar has fallen to its weakest level since October. And investors are pouring their money into other safe assets like gold, which has surged to a new record, $3,160 per troy ounce. $3,160 an ounce. Gold is up 19% this year and has posted its best quarter since 1986, all according to CNN Business. And the other effect you're going to see from all of this, folks, is the end of the dollar as the global reserve currency. We are absolutely going to tank our place as the world's economic index and people basing their economies on the dollar. We're already seeing the BRICS movement, Brazil, Russia, Iran, China, these other countries that are allying to provide alternatives to the dollar. And of course, our dollar is all propped up around oil as well. So the devastation will be catastrophic economically. We're only beginning to see the tip of the iceberg that this Titanic is running into. All right, you can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as radicalrus.com. And nowhere else. No Twitter, no Facebook, no Instagram, no LinkedIn, no MySpace, no Friendster.
Did I get them all?
Yeah, I'm only on Blue Sky. Well, I'm also on Mastodon, but I just post there. I don't answer people. You can also support this podcast financially if you're interested by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRuss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other. You try it, you own it, you smoke it, and it goes down.